19th, isn't the 19th?
It might be.
20th. For the 20th, just making sure everyone's paying attention. We know what day it is. We have a few members that are here, so I'm going to open up first House Bill 3225 and then go right over to with for Representative Smith Warner and then move to the next bill. So opening up a work session on House Bill 3225. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3225, as currently written, directs Environmental Quality Commission to adopt rules applying certain oil spill prevention and emergency response planning requirements to railroads that own or operate high hazard train routes in this state. I will direct your attention to the -4 amendment. The amendment replaces the measure. It requires the state fire marshal, as part of the effective implementation of a statewide hazardous materials emergency response system, adopt by rule, plan for coordinated response to oil or hazardous material spills or releases that occurred during rail transport. It specifies issues that that the plan must address. It requires annual report be submitted to Legislative Assembly no later than February 1 of each year that addresses issues related to oil and hazardous material emergency response for rail transport. Report is to include inventory of all emergency response resources available in state, suggested changes to structure for continued coordination between state agencies and industry, possible revisions to response roles or responsibilities of state agencies, local government, and railroads, and strategies for ensuring adequate funding at state and local government levels to cover training, equipment, administrative costs associated with providing comprehensive response and equipment. Plan becomes operative January 1, 2016. Establishes oil and hazardous material transportation by Rail Action Fund in State Treasury, distinct from General Fund, to consist of all monies provided by law or gift, grants, donations, endowments, or bequests from private or public sources. Monies from fund are continuously appropriated to Oregon State Police for use by State Fire Marshal for costs associated with development and implementation of plan. There is an emergency clause on the measure. The measure has no revenue impact. The measure does have a fiscal impact statement issued. It does need to go to Ways and Means if you adopt the -4 amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, colleagues, for hearing this bill today. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45 in Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. My involvement with this issue is because I am one of the 35 House districts in the state of Oregon that trains carrying hazardous materials move through. I am really excited to be bringing the -4s to you today. I think this is a great example of of our ability to really achieve a useful solution to an Oregon problem when we work cooperatively with all the partners involved. The -4s that you have before you are our way of, at the state level, dealing with the increase in hazardous material transport by rail. As you may know, federal preemption says that there's not a whole lot we can do around the railroad industry because the federal law really strongly preempts any our ability to do things at the state level. And so in this situation where we've had this increase in traffic, we sat down with the three affected railroads and came up with a proposal to have a central coordinating point through the state fire marshal's office. The fire marshal, they're very familiar with all the railroads, have worked long-time relationships and coordination efforts. They administer the regional hazardous response teams. And so the -4s before you will authorize the Oregon State Fire Marshal to coordinate contingency planning and training in preparation for an incident involving the transport of crude oil by rail. Under this bill, the fire marshal will adopt a plan to address incidents that occur during the transport of hazardous material by rail, to provide ongoing training for state and local first responders, and to establish the location and coordination of response materials across the state. And this is really an important element because, to give the railroads full credit on this, they do a lot of work with the local communities through which they run. However, those communities don't always know what's going on in other places, and we at the state state level don't always know what's going on at those in each of those communities. So this, by bringing this this responsibility into the fire marshal's office, it's really going to give us a centralized point of information and information sharing about what responders are trained in what methods in different parts of the states, where are their gaps in that, and they'll also do an ongoing report back to the legislature on this. The Dash 4s will require the fire marshal to report to the legislature on an inventory of the items and location of all emergency response resources that are available across the state. It'll give any possible revisions to the response roles of different state agencies and local governments and railroads, and it will also report on strategies for funding to maintain that equipment, training, and administration of critical response plans. Finally, this bill will also establish the Oil and Hazardous Material Transparency by Rail Action Fund, which will allow the fire marshal to collect funds for the cost of responding to incidents. This is part of the kind of public-private partnership we're working with here. The fire marshal did a survey statewide of where there was coverage for possible incident responses and where there were gaps. And we are working in an ongoing manner with the railroads to those gaps have been identified, and we're working closely on how we can all bring shared resources to bear to cover those gaps and make it so that not only will we have this newly established coordination point in the state fire marshal's office, but we will be able to cover some of those most of those gaps in current supplies and materials. So I'm thrilled to have this before you. I strongly urge you to vote for this, and I can vouch, although I think I'd be happy if you'd like to call them up, that representatives from Union Pacific, BNSF, and Pacific and Western were all involved and are all fully supportive of this. I'd also like to credit Speaker Kotek, who's been actively involved in this, and happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Yes, Representative Kenmer.
I would like to hear from the railroad representatives I think just get it on the record.
I will call them up after, but as we have another member here, what I'm going to do is close this work session, open up the next work session, and then call the railroads up after. Okay, thank you. And I believe that Representative Johnson also at some point is planning to come and testify.
Yes, he had indicated some interest to speak on about this as well.
Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under the rules, is a member allowed to vote from that desk?
No.
Then let's go ahead and vote now.
Thank you for your friendly advice. Declined. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3225 and open a public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2879. With that, Representative Bueller and we're expecting a handful of senators, but as usual, we're waiting on the Senate. So, Representative Bueller, the House out ahead once again. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle. For the record, my name is Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And I'd like to, first of all, thank Representative Hoyle for her co-chairing of the work group, which brings this legislation forward to you. She's shown incredible leadership in trying to get this bill done this session. I greatly appreciate that. It's been hard work and taken a lot of your time. Also want to thank the other members of the work group, which included Senator Cruz, and hopefully the good senators will join us here shortly, and both Senator/Doctors Steiner Hayward and Bates, who also put in quite a bit of time with regards to this proposal. Further thank yous to members of the medical community who have supported this effort, including the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians, the Pharmacists Association, Oregon Society of Health Systems Pharmacists, Oregon State Pharmacists Association, and Oregon Nurses Association, who have all endorsed this bill. And also a special thank you to Planned Parenthood, who's been intimately involved in these discussions and further their mission of increasing access to contraception in the state of Oregon. The medical community and overwhelming scientific evidence has shown that it's not only safe for women, but also will be one of the most significant improvements in women's health and living memory, simply by allowing them to have access to pharmaceuticals without a physician's prescription. Basically, this will be a functional over-the-counter access to hormonal birth control through a pharmacist prescription. Thank you for joining me.
Sorry.
That's fine. Studies have shown that this method of essentially over-the-counter birth control can reduce unintended pregnancies by up to 25%. And further, improving access to birth control will give women simply more options and more control over their health care needs. And as a doctor, I believe that birth control should be as easy and accessible as possible. If a woman wants to purchase birth control at her local pharmacy, she should be able to do that without having to schedule an appointment with a doctor. Think about it. If we make a race between one woman who doesn't have to go to a physician, just goes to the pharmacy, and one that has to spend the time to go through a physician, think of the time difference. Think of what you have to do. You have to call and get the appointment with the physician. You have to wait to get that physician's appointment. You have to get in and get the prescription. It has to be called into the pharmacy. You have to go to the pharmacy and pick it up, as opposed to the other woman who would just walk to the corner pharmacy and get the prescription. Quite a difference, and that's why it has such a profound effect. And it's also a profound opportunity that we've been given here to really form a bipartisan coalition on a issue that really has risen above typical politics and do what's right for women's health. And I think this is what our work group has demonstrated over the past couple of weeks. The data is clear. This is what's best for women's health care in the 21st century. There's a preponderance of evidence in the medical scientific literature to support it. And Oregon has the opportunity really to lead the rest of the nation on women's health care and firmly establish our reputation as a generator of big ideas, especially with regards to health care. Now, a few additional points. We've consistently talked about amendments, and there's a -4 amendment that I draw your attention to. And I've been asked frequently the question about our legislative intention. The intention is no way to restrict either the access or the ability of any type of prescriber who currently is able to deliver contraception in any way. That's not the intention. This is purely to expand access. And the second question I've gotten often is, how does this is this consistent with recent legislation moving through the building with regards to the 12-month supply, which is in House Bill 3343. And I actually see them as really being compatible. In fact, if not all women will want to go simply to a pharmacist, they'll want to go to their usual provider, a nurse practitioner or a physician. And it certainly is also clear in the medical evidence that a 12-month supply is best practices with regards to that method of prescribing also. So those things are compatible with this bill. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time and hearing this bill today.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from Senate District 17, and also a family physician, and honored to be sitting here with my colleagues and thanking Madam Chair for your work with us in getting this bill ready. As Representative Buehler has mentioned, what we're trying to do here is take a huge step forward in advancing access to reliable contraception for women across the state of Oregon. Up to 50% of pregnancies are unplanned. Doesn't necessarily mean unwanted, but unplanned. And we know that unplanned pregnancies, women often have less good nutrition. They're less likely to be taking prenatal vitamins, which can prevent birth defects. Women are less likely to complete education if they have an unplanned pregnancy earlier in life. There are all sorts of reasons why we want every pregnancy to be planned. It just makes for healthier moms and healthier babies and healthier families. Access to reliable contraception is one of the best ways we can do that. And this is exactly what the -4 amendments to House Bill 2879 would provide. I apologize for having been late, so I don't know if Representative Buehler mentioned it, but there are a couple other points that I'd like to make. The first is, why are we limiting this initially to women 18 and above? And that's because that's where the science is. We have really, really good studies that show that women age 18 and above can accurately complete a self-assessment tool to evaluate themselves and then work in concert with a trained pharmacist to determine whether they have risk factors that might make oral contraceptives inappropriate for them as a form of contraception. These studies have not been conducted in women younger than 18. And so until we have those studies, which I hope will be forthcoming, we didn't feel comfortable based on the science to extend this to women under 18. The second is that overall the recommendation is for women under 18 that they use what's called LARC, or long-acting reversible contraception, things like implants or IUDs. That doesn't mean that women under 18 can't successfully use oral contraception or patches. They can. But they need to be presented with this full range of option to help figure out what's going to be the option, what's the best option for them. Pharmacists will not be able to counsel people in general about long-acting reversible contraception because that won't be something that they can prescribe or insert. Pharmacists won't be inserting IUDs, and that's a good thing. I have inserted a few of them in my day. So we want to stick with the science, and then once a young woman has had the opportunity to talk with her primary care provider, after that, any subsequent prescription can come from a pharmacist, right? She won't need to go back for a renewal of her prescription. She can just go to the pharmacist at that point once she's had that initial prescription. Ultimately, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my whole focus in my medical career has been around prevention. This is a prevention bill. This is about keeping women healthy. This is about preventing unplanned pregnancy. This is about improving women's economic success by helping them choose when they become pregnant. This is about all the things that we stand for in this state about increasing access to health care. It's going to be a very big issue for rural women who are less likely to be able to get in. We know that we have a shortage of health care providers in our rural communities and, frankly, even in our urban communities. So as Representative Buehler said, sometimes the wait for a routine office visit with a primary care provider can be 3 or 4 weeks. That's a long time. That's a full cycle on birth control pills, and I'd like to get women started faster than that. The evidence is there. The science is clear, and I urge your support for the Dash 4 amendments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Crew, Senate District 1, and some of you are probably wondering, we have two very qualified doctors and a farmer. How that is supposed to fit. Here's how it fits. I've been involved in healthcare in this building for 18 years, both in the House and the Senate as a chair on the House side and as vice chair on the Senate side. And the one thing that we have been focused on over the entire time is improving access to healthcare, pure and simple. In all sorts of different forms. So when this was presented to me, I said, this is what we've been after for a long time in this state, knowing, as Senator Steiner Hayward said, we don't have all of the health care providers we need. We know that. And so anything we can do to improve access for health care in any form, I think, is something we need to take a hard look at. And if the science is there, we need to do it. And what we have been presented at this point, and I want to thank Representative Buehler. He's done an amazing amount of research on this.
Yeah.
And as I look at the data he has presented, this becomes a no-brainer for me. And so I think this is an access issue, and the simpler we can make things for people to get access to health care and preventative measures, and not always preventative measures, sometimes stabilization measures as well with this. I think we're doing a good service to the people of Oregon. So I am basically here to say that even dumb farmers can understand this stuff, and I urge you to support it.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? I do want to follow up, first of all, to thank all three of you, and specifically Representative Buehler, for bringing this forward. And to follow up on something that you brought up, Representative, is that this bill has been carefully and narrowly drafted to be about what a pharmacist can do and not what patients are allowed to give consent for. So this is very, very clear. Pharmacists go through a lot of training, and this is about medication management, about ease of access, especially in some of our rural areas. Again, reducing unintended pregnancies, it's a great idea. So with that, I will say that we're missing one part of paperwork, so we will not be able to move the bill today. It's our intention to move the bill tomorrow. But what we'll do is adopt the dash four amendments, if my vice chair would give me a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the dash four amendment to House Bill 2879.
Representative Gilliam has moved the dash four amendments to House Bill 2879. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. With that, thank you very much. We will be moving this tomorrow, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2879. Yes. So with that, I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 3225 and Representative Johnson. So Representative Smith-Warner has already testified to her support, and then we also, if there are some railroads that would like, not railroads in particular, but people representing the railroads, we do not want the railroads to come up. If you'd like to come up afterwards to speak to the process, that would be great. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, for the record, Mark Johnson from House District 52, and I live in Hood River, which is in the beautiful Columbia River Gorge, which, as you might well know, is the only national scenic area in the country.
Could you move that microphone just a little bit closer? And there you go.
Much better.
There we go. And obviously, it's in a very environmentally sensitive area as well. Might have constituents that are concerned about preserving our beauty, preserving our natural state that we have, and obviously the concept of oil trains going through our up and down the Columbia River Gorge on both sides. We're serviced by two railroads that actually transport cargo through the gorge. Can be concerning. Hood River City Council has actually taken a vote indicating their concern about that. So that's why I've jumped into this issue and worked very closely with Representative Smith-Warner's office on the issue. And I think, you know, I don't know how her testimony went, but, you know, you have to kind of...
It went well.
Sure it was stellar.
It was stellar testimony.
But I think as we talk about oil and trains and cargo, you know, you first have to kind of understand the playing field that you deal with. And there certainly are very, very strong federal laws that govern interstate commerce for good reasons. And those who would like to say, as some of my constituents would say, well, we should just outlaw that. We shouldn't allow that cargo to go up and down the gorge. You know, you have to say, you know, you really can't do that. There are people higher up the food chain that make those decisions than us. So then you come back to, well, what can we do to try to ensure safety? What can we do to try to preserve and prepare for any sort of unfortunate events that could occur? And that's where I think the dash four amendments to House Bill 3225 get us a long way there. It really sets up, I think, a chain of command if, in fact, something should happen. It makes it clear who has responsibility to do what, and it makes the fire marshal, which I think everybody would agree would be the best first responder we have in the state of Oregon, to first of all do a survey of what resources we have available, who provides what, where is it located, how do we access it, and then puts into effect that chain of command if in fact there is an incident, who will be the controlling interest and so forth. So I think this is really a good piece of work. It's a good collaborative piece of work, and I would hope that you support this. I think this will be the kind of effort that my constituents are looking for, is just some greater coordination and communication about what we can do across the state of Oregon should the event, any unfortunate event, occur. I do need to point out, though, I think that this is a beginning. It's not the end of the process. I really continue to advocate for a full multimodal plan regarding road, rail, water traffic. As we talk about hazardous cargoes, this just simply addresses rail, because we know that we've got all kinds of other things going up and down our highways and byways as well. And that's okay. I don't disparage that. But as we talk about higher flammable cargoes, especially if you talk about low carbon fuel standard, we theoretically will have all kinds of truckloads of ethanol and biofuels traveling around that we currently don't have as well. So we need to be prepared for that. So I think this is a good step in the right direction. In addition to that, it's my understanding that the carriers themselves are also providing some information about exactly what sort of resources that they're making available to assist in this work. I think that's great. And I do need to just take my hat off and say that the carriers have been great partners with this. The rails have all been intimately involved and forthcoming with information and cooperation. So they certainly have no interest in having any unfortunate event occur as well. So with that, I'll answer any questions and leave you to your work.
Questions? Comments? Thank you so much for your work and your interest in this. This is, again, a great example of a public-private partnership. And with that, anyone representing the railroads like to come up and speak to the process?
And like to or be willing to?
Be willing to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tom Barrows, representing BNSF Railway. We've been working on this issue throughout the session. I want to thank Representative Smith-Warner, Representative Johnson, Speaker Kotek, and others that have participated in this, trying to come up with something that that we can work with. We think we're at that point with the Dash 4s.
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert and I represent Union Pacific Railroad. This bill has turned out to be a great conversation starter and is actually going to result in some excellent changes for the citizens of Oregon. Not only is there coordination that is now being allowed to be done through the state fire marshal on how to respond, but it's moved the state fire marshal into that first realm of coordination before it even passes, and that's sitting down with each of the railroads and talking about, these are our gaps, this is our concern. What are you going to help us do about that? Equipment, operations, facilities, we're bringing it all to the table. Personal note, could not have been more proud to be part of Union Pacific Railroad during this process. They really stepped up, and I think the other railroads have as well. And this is the start of something really great, and I hope it serves as a good model of public-private partnerships for other states who are dealing with the same issue. And thank you, Representative Smith-Warner. Thank you, Representative Hoyle. Thank you to the speaker, who's not really up there. That just, but she's two floors up, right?
Upstairs. Yes.
For helping us to make this happen. Union Pacific has been happy to help the Oregonians feel safer.
Yes, Representative Kenemer.
I just want to thank you both for your straightforwardness. It's pretty hard to misunderstand what you said. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we mumble in this building and don't say what's on our mind, and I felt like this was pretty straightforward, that you're okay with this.
Thank you, Representative Kenemer. I never mumble.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you, and thank you again for, I know that this wasn't always easy, but for your work and please thank your clients for their investment in Oregon. This will make everyone safer and really a great process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I accept a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. However, prior to my motion, I have to say that a bill that is railroaded in this body sometimes, certainly not this session, but sometimes can have a different meaning. And my hat is off to our vice chair.
Yep.
And I really sincerely, I know I was kidding around, appreciate your work on this and bringing people together with something that we can move forward with compromise, knowing that we have moved forward. So with that, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendment to 2879.
Yeah. 3225.
Well, I'm getting to that. I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendment, pardon my misspeaking, to House Bill 3225.
Vice Chair Gilley, move to not good.
Uh-oh.
Oh, adopt Dash 4.
She has a hard time coming back from the abyss. Once
you
want
to give it to the vice chair?
Do we need a short recess?
Yeah, maybe we already have the other vice chair.
Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3225. Is there any discussion? Yes.
I would just like to very briefly thank you all for your kind words, but this really was, it really was a great collaborative effort with the railroads. And I would just also like for the record, although Pacific and Western was not, is not physically in the room right now, they were both involved in the process and signed off on the overall agreement. So I just wanted to make that clear for the record.
Thank you. Is there any objection? If not, motion passes. Let's try this again.
Let's try. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3225 with a due pass as amended recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 3225 with a due pass as amended recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3225. And with that, we can do
it. Get in there, maybe.
So we are going to be holding over House Bill 2478. Until tomorrow, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2736. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2736, I will just direct your attention to the -2 amendment. The -2 amendment replaces the original measure and establishes a 17-member task force on Vision Zero, achieving zero traffic crashes, injuries, and fatalities. The amendment specifies membership in charge of task force, specifies that task force is required to submit report no later than September 15th of 2016 to interim legislative committee related to transportation and is effectively repealed on December 31st of 2016. The Oregon Department of Transportation is responsible for providing staff support to task force. There is an emergency clause on the measure. The measure has no revenue impact, but it does have a potential fiscal impact on the Department of Transportation, therefore it does need a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
With that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendment to House Bill 2736.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved to adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2736. Is there any objection, any discussion?
Just some discussion, a little background about how we came to choose zero traffic crashes, injuries, and fatalities. I mean, it seems like a very admirable goal. It also doesn't seem very feasible in the world I live in.
So the Vision Zero process really is something that came out. Representative Davis put forward a bill and about reflective vests. You may have remembered his colorful testimony on the floor. And really wanted to get to the place of what can we do to reduce the amount of fatalities and injuries for bicyclists, cyclists, and pedestrians. Vision Zero really is a concept. It is aspirational. As we know, there never will be zero traffic injuries or pedestrian injuries or fatalities. But what we do want to do is ensure that we're working towards that vision of having zero fatalities. Nobody wants to have a fatality in their districts, and we all have. So this really is focusing on studying that. We could.
I think that's sufficient. I just needed a little bit of background to understand it, at least for me.
Right, right. Any more discussion? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I made reference to this the other day, but it looks like my chances of being involved in a bill that studies the uniform speed bump, height, and markings is growing smaller every day. Everything that is about that subject seems to get gut and stuffed. Are we going to have any other bills about speed bumps?
Representative Wilson, I'm sorry to say I don't believe we will, not this session, but maybe next session.
Okay.
Madam Chair, aren't speed bumps dangerous for motorcycles?
I believe they are. I think you should ask Representative Wilson.
They can be.
With that, any other discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes, and I'd accept another motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2736 with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 2736 with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Any other discussion? Is there objection? If not, the motion passes, and we close the work session on House Bill 2736. Actually, I want to move to a different one. Okay, with that, I'd like to open up a work session on House Bill 2730. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2730, we heard on Monday, May 18th, at which time we adopted the Dash 2 Amendment. The Dash 2 Amendment, and now the bill provides for creation of Portland Trailblazers vehicle registration plate, imposes surcharge of $20 per year, provides for creation of breast cancer awareness vehicle registration plate, imposes $20 surcharge per year for registration, and directs Oregon Department of Transportation to transfer proceeds to Oregon Health Authority Fund, specifies that neither plate may be created or issued until the department receives the amount necessary to cover costs of initiating plate program. It repeals statutes limiting number of specialty license plates that may be issued by department and directs them to establish special registration program and provide for issuance of special registration plates to nonprofit groups. Specifies that if once a plate is issued, the department does not issue 2,000 sets in 1 year, that particular set will cease production, prohibits creation of new group registration plates as of the effective date of this measure, allows transfer of group plates and veteran plates from one vehicle to another. There is an emergency clause on the measure. We have now received a revenue impact statement, and we also received a fiscal impact statement. This measure does need to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, I would accept a motion. You want to do the motion?
Already amended. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2730 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. There's no.
And be referred to.
And be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 2730 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a schizophrenic vote for me. I really like those license plates, and I am terribly conflicted on the matter we discussed, moving this from the legislature to the department. And if it makes it out of Ways and Means, I reserve the right to change my mind on the floor. But I can tell you, I will speak to the latter part on the floor. But otherwise, I think it's a good idea to move this right along.
Okay. With that, any other discussion? Yes, Representative McLean.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Like Representative Gilliam, I'm not a fan of more license plates. I think expansion should be limited to nonprofits or something that's consistent with state functions. And I'm concerned that opening up to for-profit companies, albeit popular, is not a good move on our part. But nevertheless, certainly voting yes to move it to Ways and Means is something I support.
Great. Any other discussion? With that, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2730. I'm going to hold over. I'll just hold it till tomorrow so we can talk about it. We'll hold it over.
Fair enough. Good argument.
Okay, so we've got, we're just going to do two more bills today. HJM 16, and then House Bill 2198. If you are here for another bill that isn't one of these two, we're holding those over till tomorrow. So with that, I'm going to open up a work session on HJM 16. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Joint Memorial 16 urges Congress to work with Turkish diplomats, European Union, NATO, and allies to stop mass arrests for detainment of journalists in Turkey. This measure was originally heard on April 20th. There is no revenue and no fiscal impact on the measure.
I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move HJM 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Gilliam, Vice Chair Gilliam, has moved HJM 16 to be has moved HJM 16 with a be adopted recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, the motion passes.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Yes. I was just asking Representative Barnhart if we amended that or we were just moving to the floor because I misheard you.
No, Madam Chair, Representative McLean, there were no amendments. We were just moving it to the floor with it be adopted.
Thank you.
And Representative Widener will sign Representative Widener as the carrier. Him and his staff have done tremendous amount of work on this particular memorial. With that, I will close the work session on HJM 16. And very front page. Last bill. Open a work session on House Bill 2198. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2198 was heard on Monday. The measure defines affordable housing, area median income, and development for purposes of statute, directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to develop and implement the Affordable Family Housing Development Program, creates Affordable Family Housing Development Fund within General Fund, allows the department to acquire, construct, develop, improve, rehabilitate, and own affordable housing for families with children, and make and administer to support such projects, requires report to Legislative Assembly on or before February 1st, 2016. On Monday, we adopted two amendments. We adopted the Dash A2 amendment, which changes program name to Local Innovation and Fast Track Housing, clarifies contracting and funding authority for the program, allows the department to purchase land for affordable housing development, outlines funding preferences, changes language on state's contribution to properties from loans and grants to equity contribution to align with Article 11 Q bond requirements, and details the department's legislative reporting requirement. In addition, we adopted the A3 amendment, which deletes reference to a metropolitan statistical in the definition of area median income. This measure has no revenue impact. It does have a fiscal impact statement issued. This measure will need to go to Ways and Means.
Okay, so with that, I'll Representative Smith-Warner make a motion and then we can have discussion.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2730. Sorry. I was just pulling a Gillum there. Madam Chair, I move.
It wasn't bad enough.
I move House Bill 2198A with a do pass as amended recommendation and be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 2198 with a do pass as amended recommendation to be referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? And I know yesterday I had requested that Ms. Van Vliet go and make appointments and speak Monday. To, or was it Monday?
Yeah.
Wow. On Monday, go speak to some of you, and I hope that happened. Representative Kenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It did, and I wish to thank the director and her assistant for coming and visiting with me somewhat extensively about it. I raised a number of concerns, and I still have most of those concerns. Certainly all of us, I suspect, support housing for everyone, and particular sensitivity to those of low income. And having grown up at one point living in a chicken barn and in several shacks, I think I have some personal appreciation for some of that reality. On the other hand, I think that if we're not careful, we are enabling instead of empowering people with this approach. If we're not careful, they get locked into these lower rates, and they don't create the necessary capital to invest in their own future. And certainly there are those who will never be able to do those, and those are people for whom there is an immense need. And we have a lot of already this kind of property available. But I do think we need to be following things like my wife served for, I don't know, at least 10 years on the board of Northwest Housing Alternatives. And they have a program wherein you get into housing, and you, as your property appreciates, you accrue that to your own personal accrual. And we saw one family after another be able to have the capital necessary to purchase their own home. I think this is the direction that we need to move, where we empower people to get out of poverty instead of keep them there. And I guess as one who was poor, I remember we sort of had an axiom, as I feel a lot of poor people have. When you have money, you spend it, and when you don't, you don't. And I think we need to create social programs that encourage people to be good stewards and to grow and change. And I think it's in people's best interest. It's sort of the American tradition that we rise above our roots. And for that reason, I'm not going to be supporting this. I would like to see this money invested in a program where people could be earning an equity that could be transferred somewhere else so that they would have that capital necessary to purchase their own properties. And I think that would be a phenomenal investment, instead of simply a helping hand that really is temporary.
Fair.
And thank you for the indulgence.
No, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, want to thank the director for stopping by. It was very informative, and I appreciate the time. And from sources I trust, I understand she's doing a great job with the department. I'm just not comfortable with the concept. Public housing never seems to work well in this particular sense. I'm concerned about the future. It is a big change. There are many units. A lot of land will be pulled off the tax rolls as a result of this, as I understand it. And you know, I think it's just a really big, big change of direction. And I don't know if more time thinking about it and contemplating would do it for me. Probably not initially, but, you know, I agree with Representative Kenemer. You know, this is a difficult situation, the housing for many folks, but it is an American tradition to strive to get above your roots. And that's so much of what this country is about. And I think that a lot of times in our desire to help, we wind up enabling, and I just want to be slow to do that. So I'll be a no today. Thanks.
Yes, Representative Rayfield.
I thought it make sense to offer a perspective. I sit on the Lynn Benton Housing Authority. I'm also on a nonprofit that also deals with affordable housing, at least in our area. The stock of affordable housing, or the demand for affordable housing, is increasing at an exponential rate compared to the increase in the stock of affordable housing. At the Housing Authority, we have a wait list of over 4,000 individuals, and we are very, very active, because I agree with both of my colleagues about transitioning folks off of these types of programs and assistance. And there really is, we look at it as a continuum. Someone might start on Section 8 and gradually work out, and we have programs to do that, and we have graduation classes, and there's some really exciting stuff that goes on. What I will tell you, from a Housing Authority level, we can't rely on the federal government for a lot of the stuff that we're, you know, for funding these programs, and so we need to look at alternative mechanisms to do this. And so we look at low-income housing tax credits, programs like this. And so the tools in this bill will actually allow multiple entities to create positive solutions and different solutions that they otherwise would not be able to do. And so I think this is a good bill, and for those reasons, I'm very happy to support it. I would like to see, and I think we all need to keep in mind that the amount of money is a drop in the bucket compared to the need in this state.
Thank you. Yes, Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I disagree with my good friend and colleague from Corvallis in that this will provide some long-term solutions. I think it will provide some short-term relief. It certainly will when government spends money. It can actually purchase services for folks, and so in that regard it does. I'm concerned about two main things. One, the operational authority that this amendment gave. I'm not satisfied that the director's statement that the agency doesn't want to operate housing that it owns will actually be a consistent going forward mode of the state. I think it will end up operating this. I think reality is, from my perspective, this is a Band-Aid. We're not doing anything, very little in this session, in my opinion, to actually address the issue of why we have such a rising demand of or for affordable housing. We haven't talked about some of the land use issues, the urban growth boundary expansions that take decades and hundreds of millions of dollars in appeals, and we haven't talked about good paying jobs beyond what seems to be a insatiable appetite for worker rights by the majority party. But nevertheless, when you talk about what it takes to afford housing, it requires an economy. We have one of the most restrictive land uses systems in the entire United States, an economy that lags behind our sister states of the North and South. And so, you know, we're continuing to avoid what's causing this. 100 million, 85 million of which is from the extraordinary step of taking Q-bonds, our constitutional Q-bonds, is to me opening up a door that we really shouldn't and is imprudent. Frankly, I think there will be the question will be two decades from now, will this be something we're proud of? I'm sure the majority party who has the votes to move it will say absolutely. I'll take that bet. Two decades from now, Madam Chair, if we actually see how this program worked, I think we're going to see that it didn't work nearly as well, nor effective, nor did it provide any long-term solutions that we aspire. But instead, it took bonding capacity. We could have actually doubled the amount of housing, affordable housing, if we would have actually addressed the core issue that's driving the demand for it. But there's no will, and therefore there's no way. I'll be a no on to ways and means. But I appreciate the director coming to my office and at least explaining a little more about the bill.
Thank you. And I appreciate the concerns of my colleagues and also you know, ideas on different ways to address the housing issue. I think that there are some very, very valid concerns and important points that were made. I know that when my father got out of the Air Force, we moved from a 11-by-17 mobile home to veterans housing that was rental housing that was in a duplex, and it was actually in a decent neighborhood, and it was a place that that made a difference while he got on his feet after coming out of the service, and it allowed our family to then move on to that next place where he could get a job, where they could actually save up money to buy a home because the rent was affordable. And for my mother, it was a place where she could actually feel like she could invite people over to, which was important to have pride in a place. But the key thing was it allowed my family to save enough money to be able to eventually buy a home and have that American dream. But I think I think the concerns are certainly well-founded and are something we should keep in mind. And Representative Kennemer, I really appreciate your words that, yes, we do need to give people the opportunity and the incentive to actually invest and move ahead. So with that, there is a motion, and we'll do a roll call.
Madam
Madam Chair.
Yes, oh, sorry.
The motion is to send the bill to Ways and Means.
Send the bill to Ways and Means. Yes.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
No.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
No.
Vice Chair Ebenwater.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2198.
And Madam Chair, just for clarity, the bills we are carrying over to tomorrow, House Bill 2478, House Bill 2879, House Bill 2936, House Bill 3500, House Bill 3470. And just a reminder, we are meeting in, we are here tomorrow at 3 p.m. This will be added to the existing agenda, in which we'll be doing a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 3549.
With that, we are adjourned, and thank you. Are adjourned, and thank you.